The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello. This is John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the September-October issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to begin with Who's Who in Sports on the third line, and we have Kelsey Plum, Las Vegas Aces guard. Her height is 5'8". She was born August 24, 1994, in hometown Poway, California. In her fifth WNBA season, Plum made her first All-Star team. She finished the regular season with an average of 20.2 points per game, as the Aces had the best record in the Western Conference, 26-10. Plum was drafted first overall but of Washington in 2017 by the San Antonio Stars, who later became the Aces. But did you know Plum holds the NCAA record for points in a season, 1,109, and a career, 3,527, a mark she set with 57 points on the Huskies' senior night in 2017. Naomi Girma, San Diego Wave defender. Her height is 5'7". She was born June 14, 2000, her hometown, San Jose, California. The top pick in the 2022 National Women's Soccer League draft, Girma wasted no time making her mark on the Wave, being named to the league's best 11 in each of the first 2 months. In college, she was the captain of Stanford's 2019 NCAA championship team. Girma has made 6 appearances for the United States women's national team. But did you know Girma was born to parents who immigrated from Ethiopia? She graduated from Stanford, where she majored in symbolic systems with a 3.92 GPA. Good job, Girma. Finally, we have Iga Swiatek, Women's Tennis Association Tour. Her height is 5'9". She was born May 31, 2001, in her hometown, Warsaw, Poland. In April, Swiatek took over the world number one ranking. 2 months later, she won the French Open for the second time. The first was 2020, when she became the first player from Poland to win a Grand Slam event. She was upset in the quarterfinals at Wimbledon, which ended her 37-match winning streak, the longest of this century. But did you know the longest winning streak in women's tennis history is 74 matches by Martina Navratilova in 1984? Picture of Joe Burrows of the Cincinnati Bengals. Tanking, trading, drafting, having a lot of money. In the Big Four men's sports, there are plenty of ways to put together a title-worthy team, but none of them are easy, and they're certainly not foolproof. Game plans. NFL, if you want to win, you need a quarterback. How you get him is a whole other question. Just 4 years ago, Joe Burrow was living a pretty normal existence. Sure, he was a quarterback for a major college football program, LSU, but it's not like he was being mobbed by fans wherever he went. He'd been a backup at Ohio State before transferring to LSU. When he walked from Tiger Stadium across the street to his car, it was a peaceful stroll. A year later, that same walk became so perilous that Burrow considered hiring a full-time bodyguard. The reason was simple. LSU was in the midst of a national title run, and when something like that happens, the focus of the fans always turns to one player, the quarterback. It is definitely the most important position in football, and arguably the most important in all of sports. In the modern NFL, a team without an elite quarterback has no chance to win the Super Bowl. The QBs who have done it recently are among the best who have ever played. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees. Even the teams who have been able to win without a future Hall of Famer under center have relied on a quarterback having a monster season, such as Carson Wentz to the Eagles, 2018, and Joe Flacco, the Ravens, 2013. So after Burrow's senior season, in which he threw for 60 touchdowns and just 6 interceptions, and won the Heisman Trophy, the Bengals jumped at the chance to select him with the first pick in the draft. Two roads. Since he drafted Burrow on the right, while the Rams gave up a package of picks and a quarterback to get Stafford, Burrow was immediately hailed as a savior in title-starved Cincinnati. He tried as hard as he could to stay grounded and out of the spotlight. He kept up a routine in which he had a regular video game night with his old friend from Athens, Ohio. From Athens High. As they played Star Wars Battlefront 2 on Xbox Live, Burrow was just one of the guys. His buddies had no problem poking fun at him, reminding Burrow that in their eyes he wasn't an NFL superstar. They'd adopt a goofy voice and say, "Oh, look at me, big Mr. Quarterback." But as Cincinnati's fortunes improved on the field, it became harder for Burrow to be anything but Mr. Quarterback. Heck, even the kicker was appearing on billboards last year. So you can imagine how hard it was for Burrow to go outside without being mobbed. So close. The Bengals' season culminated with a run to a Super Bowl 56, just the third time the franchise had reached the big game. They lost to the Rams 23-20, but their performance sent a message that Cincinnati is going to be a handful for years to come. So close. Just 1 year after a 4-win season, Cincinnati and Burrow came within 85 seconds of the franchise's first Super Bowl victory. Burrow's star in turn in the second season more than justified the team's decision to take him first. Cincinnati was able to build a system that allowed him to shine. Burrow is an incredibly accurate passer with a quick release, so the Bengals installed a spread offense that gave him just enough time to deliver the ball to an open receiver. Protection was an issue. Burrow was sacked 70 times last year, counting the postseason. Trading for a QB. The team Burrow and his Bengals lost to in Super Bowl 56 took the opposite path to finding its quarterback. The Rams went out and got him. Los Angeles tried the draft and nurture method, selecting Jared Goff first in 2016, sacrificing 2 first-round picks to move up to get him. Goff was solid in his first 3 seasons, but began to slide in 2020 as the Rams' defense flourished. Meanwhile, in Detroit, the Lions and longtime QB Matthew Stafford, below the top pick in 2009 draft, decided a change of scenery would benefit both parties. So Detroit traded him to the Rams for Goff, 2 first-round picks and a 3rd-rounder. The price Los Angeles paid was heavy, but the deal made sense. The Rams were at the verge of Super Bowl contention and needed an upgrade at quarterback. Would the same deal have made sense for, say, the 6-11 Bears? No, because they need so much more than a quarterback, and giving away draft capital would make it harder to build a roster. Acquiring an elite quarterback is not easy. Teams that have them aren't likely to give them up. When one becomes available, it's usually because the player and his team feel like they've gone as far as they together as they can. In 2020, Tom Brady decided he'd done enough with the Patriots and became a free agent. He signed a 2-year deal worth at least $50 million guaranteed with a team on the cusp of contention, the Buccaneers. That underscored another difficulty in acquiring a star signal caller. It's expensive, but it paid dividends, as Tampa won the Super Bowl in Brady's first season. So keep an eye on this year on the Colts. After finishing 9-8 last season with Carson Wentz under center, they traded for longtime Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan. The four-time Pro Bowler with nearly 60,000 career passing yards was available after Atlanta decided it needed to go in a new direction. Since the Falcons seemed desperate to move on from him, the price was reasonable, just a third-round pick, giving the Colts a massive upgrade while allowing them to improve at other positions. The hope is simple. Repeat what the Rams and Bucks did and pray a living legend will thrive in new surroundings. Game plans and his rookie year was cut short by a knee injury. Burrow was sacked 70 times last year, counting the postseason, and his rookie year was cut short by a knee injury suffered when he was hit by a crew of Washington pass rushers. But Burrow was still able to make it work, because more often than not, he was able to save to find his playmakers in time. Still, that underscores one of the dangers of building a system around an untested young quarterback. What if you draft a guy, construct a scheme that fits his strength, and it turns out that when he's under the gun, he's just not very good? Now, if you want to bring in another quarterback, you're likely going to be trying to force a square peg into a round hole. And what if you don't have the pieces to put together the kind of supporting cast he needs? That's a recipe for disaster. At least in the short term, consider this. As a rookie, Burrow didn't have an elite wideout to throw to. The Bengals were just 2-7-1 when Burrow got him. They staggered home to a 4-11-1 finish. That was bad enough to get them the fifth pick in the draft, which they used on Jamar Chase, a wide receiver from LSU. The first three picks were not surprisingly quarterbacks. Burrow's old Tigers team went on to scratch 81 passes for 1,455 yards. A similar thing happened to Peyton Manning. The first pick in the 1988 draft, he struggled mightily with the Colts as a rookie, throwing 28 interceptions for an Indianapolis team that finished 3-13. With the fourth pick in the draft, after three QBs, of course, the Colts were able to select running back Edgerton James, who went on to become a Hall of Famer. Indy went 13-3 the next year. That could give Jacksonville fans reason to feel optimistic. In 2021, the Jags took over Trevor Lawrence's first, the 18th time in 24 years that a QB was the top pick. He had a horrid rookie season, and Jacksonville finished at 3-14, allowing the team to pick first again. The Jags took edge, rather, rusher Trevon Walker. That move might not send Jacksonville straight to the Super Bowl, but it will make the team substantially better in the long run. And building around a young quarterback can't be a long, bumpy process. NHL. Fans and players tanking, but the results are undeniable. Show the picture here on page 40 of a big tank on the ice, probably in Detroit. The Motor City Assembly Line. You can buy a shirt online that says, "Keep calm and trust the Wiser Plan," or one that says, "Believe in Wiser Plan." For Red Wing fans, the Wiser Plan, a portmanteau of general manager Steve Yzerman and Plan, gives hope, even confidence, after six straight seasons without a playoff berth. They trust the Yzer Plan because he held the team to three Stanley Cups as a player, and more importantly, built up a Tampa Bay Lightning organization that just appeared in three consecutive Stanley Cup finals. The fans in Detroit are encouraged for another simple reason. They're not average anymore. They're generally bad. In the three seasons before hiring Yzerman, the Red Wings hovered around 30 wins. In the three campaigns before him, they lost in the first round. Yzerman's first Red Wings teams in 2019-2020 went 17-49-5. Often in the NHL, to become loyal, good, you have to first be bad. Tanking now exists in every sport to various extents. With the NHL's incentive to lose remains the strongest, unlike the other three major North American men's pro leagues, the NHL has a hard salary cap. a rich owner in Toronto can't pay a luxury tax to spend more money, and Colorado doesn't get to use bird rights to keep Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar happy. So teams' windows of contention are smaller, and the cycle of winning and rebuilding more pronounced. The nature of the sport also makes the lottery draft picks, especially the top three, especially valuable. Speed and still win championships. Elite offensive hockey talents emerge sooner and peak younger. Google the last 20 years of number one picks in the Major League Baseball draft. How many look like future Hall of Famers? Probably just Bryce Harper. But from the same list for the NHL, Fleury, Ovechkin, Crosby, Kane, Stamkos, Tavares, McKinnon, McDavid, etc., it'd be easier to list the guys who won't get enshrined. Another name seemingly destined to join that list is Regina Patch, center Connor Bedard, the presumptive top pick in next year's draft. Bedard is such a sure thing that the Chicago Blackhawks demanded their entire team this offseason for a chance to pick him. The Blackhawks were not good last year, 28-42-12. At the same time, however, they declared their intention, like the Red Wings 3 years ago, to get a lot worse and fast. Unfortunately, none of their highest-paid older players would be difficult to move in a salary cap league. So they shocked the hockey world by instead dealing their inexpensive, talented young players, 24-year-old Alex DeBrincat and 21-year-old Kirby Dach, as far for draft picks. Trading a proven young scorer like DeBrincat to acquire unproven young scorers may seem foolish, but there's a long logic to it. The players the Blackhawks draft this year and then next will inherit a team with a clean cleep sheet, no longer devoting more than a quarter of its final to payroll aging superstars in Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. After all, it was the good fortune of having the number three and number one persons in 2006 and 2007 to win the three Stanley Cups in the previous decade. The most important factor in building a contender these days is timing. The Motor City Assembly Line. You can buy a shirt online that says, "Keep calm and trust the Iser Plan," or one that says, "Believe in the Iser Plan." For Red Wings fans, the Iser Plan, a portmanteau of General Manager Steve Yzerman and Plan, gives hope, even confidence, after six straight seasons without a playoff berth. They trust the Iser Plan because he led the team to three Stanley Cups as a player, and more importantly, built up a Tampa Bay Lightning organization that just appeared in three consecutive Stanley Cup finals. The fans in Detroit are encouraged for another simpler reason. They're not average anymore. They're genuinely bad. In the three seasons before hiring Yzerman, the Red Wings hovered around 30 wins. In the three campaigns before that, they lost in the first round. Yzerman's first Red Wing teams in 2019-2020 went 17-49-5. Often in the NHL, to become good, you have to first be bad. Tanking now exists in every sport to various extents. For the NHL's incentive to lose remains the strongest. Unlike the other three major North American men's pro leagues, the NHL has a hard salary cap. A rich owner in Toronto can't pay a luxury tax to spend more money, and Colorado doesn't get to use bird rights to keep Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar happy. So teams' windows of contention are smaller, and the cycle of winning and rebuilding more pronounced. The nature of the sport also makes the lottery draft picks, especially the top three, especially valuable. Speed and skill win championships. Elite offensive hockey talents emerge sooner and peak younger. Google the last 20 years of number one picks in the Major League Baseball draft. How many look like future Hall of Famers? probably just Bryce Harper. But from the same list for the NHL, Fleury, Ovechkin, Crosby, Kane, Stamkos, Tavares, MacKinnon, McDavid, etc., it'd be easier to list the guys who won't get enshrined. Another name seemingly destined to join that list is Regina Pat's center, Connor Island. Bedard, the presumptuous top pick in next year's draft. Bedard is such a sure thing that the Chicago Blackhawks dismantled their entire team this offseason for a chance to pick him. The Blackhawks were not good last year, 28-42-12. At the draft, however, they declared their intention like the Red Wings 3 years ago, to get a lot worse and fast. Unfortunately, some of their highest-paid older players would be difficult to move in a salary-capped league. So they shocked the hockey world by instead dealing their inexpensive, talented young players, 24-year-old Alex DeBrincat and 21-year-old Kirby Dach, for draft picks. Trading a proven young scorer like DeBrincat to acquire unproven young scorers may seem foolish, but there's a logic to it. The players, the Blackhawks, draft this season and next will inherit a team with a clean cap sheet, no longer devoting more than a quarter of his payroll to two aging superstars in Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. After all, it was the good fortune of having the number 3 and number 1 picks in 2006 and 2007 that allowed the Blackhawks to get Toews and Kane to win 3 Stanley Cups in the previous decade. The most important factor in building a contender these days is timing. Major League Baseball, you don't have to be rich in baseball, but it sure helps. It has a picture here of a mountaintop with L.A. Dodgers at the top, Pittsburgh, the Athletics, and Miami at the bottom. Cost of being boss. Looking at the Major League standings at most points this past season, it was hard not to notice that the three best teams, the Dodgers, Mets, and Yankees, reside in the United States' two biggest cities. Though the Houston Astros in the mix and the four most dominant teams were each from one of the country's four most populous areas. Baseball, the only North American sport without a salary cap, is starting to look like European soccer, in which the richest markets attract the richest owners, who pay for the best players. It didn't used to be this way. As recently as 2010, the Mets and Dodgers were in the fourth place, and the Yankees lost out in the AL East to the Tampa Bay Rays, whose opening day payroll, $72 million, was less than half of New York's $206 million. The big market teams were in flux. The Dodgers owners, Frank and Jamie McCord, had just begun divorce proceedings. Yankees boss George Steinbrenner died that summer, leaving the team to his children. And Mets owner Fred Wilpon's finances were uncertain after having hundreds of millions of dollars tied up in Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme. Since then, the Dodgers sold to an ownership group led by Lakers legend Magic Johnson, and billionaire Steve Cohen bought the Mets. The top three payrolls in baseball, the Dodgers, $265 million, Mets, $261 million, and the Yankees, $251 million. Baseball's bi-coastal realignment, however, is not just a question of more money, but smarter money. In the early 90s, the Mets and Yankees spent aggressively and got middling to disastrous results. Small market teams could gain an advantage in player evaluation and development. But the rosters of baseball's new Big Three littered with homegrown stars Aaron Judge, Pete Alonso, Clayton Kershaw, complemented by a can't-miss superstar free agents like Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer, and Freddie Freeman. All three teams resisted the urge to raise their farm systems in pursuit of Juan Soto. After all, there's still hope Soto will become a free agent one day, when he'll just cost money, of which they have plenty. Baseball's always been rigged. The rich teams are just getting smarter about rigging it. The wildest card yet. While baseball's franchise became more unequal, the league has pushed the playoff format to be more egalitarian. The prospect of three teams spending five times the cheapest franchise's payroll would be more dire for most of baseball's history, when the playoffs consisted of just two or four teams. Under the new collective bargaining agreement, 12 teams qualify for a four-round playoff. There weren't 12 teams this season with a 26-man payroll above $100 million. So, inevitably, at least one mid- to small-market team will make the tournament. And baseball's playoffs are notoriously a crapshoot. The best teams prevail over 162 games. But in a 3-, 5-, or 7-game series, a hot pitching staff can pull an upset. That team, the New York franchises, quintupled in spending this season. It was the Baltimore Orioles who spent most of the season in wild card contention. Continuing with game plans, NBA. Stars want to play together, but is that an ideal situation? Navigating the NBA's Avengers era. How important is star power in the NBA? Consider this. No team has ever won the league without at least one Hall of Fame player on his roster. For recent champs whose players aren't yet eligible, we're counting obvious shoe-ins like Steph Curry, LeBron James. So it must stand to reason with the more superstars you have, the better off you are, right? Maybe. In 1999, Sports Illustrated noted the trend of teams trying to find a second elite player when the headline on the magazine's NBA preview issue was the power of two. In 2010, three became the new two. That was the year LeBron James hit free agency and decided to play in Miami alongside his pal Dwayne Wade. For good measure, that dynamic duo reached out to free agent center and future Hall of Famer Chris Bosh and convince him to also move to Florida. Just like that, the NBA had its original big three. The Heat won two titles in 4 years, then James returned to Cleveland as a free agent in 2014. The Cavs already had Kyrie Irving, and they needed to embrace the big three formula by trading the center for center Kevin Love. 2 years later, they won their first NBA title. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.